Coming up on this episode of the NHL At the Rink podcast, Sean and I talk all about the conference final. Game ones are in the books. The Dallas Stars are up. The Florida Panthers are up. What's coming down the pike in those series? We dive into a little off-season stuff with the Bruins and the Leafs. All of that and more coming up on the NHL At the Rink podcast.
NHL At the Rink is presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
Welcome into another episode of the NHL At the Rink podcast. As always, it's presented by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Sean, we got games ones. I don't know how you do it in the Eastern and Western Conference Final. Both down. We're recording this Thursday morning. Quick takeaway, Sean. What do you think so far? We got Dallas. Comeback win up 1-0. We got the Florida Panthers with a Florida Panthers-like win up 1-0 in that series.
My quickest takeaway is don't make a quick takeaway.
All right. Why not?
Because I don't think either game or either scoreline was representative of the games that were played. Look, you're at the Florida-Carolina game. You could probably tell me better. Maybe I'm Stockholm Syndrome with Rod Brendamore because I've covered that series for so long. I didn't hate their game. I thought they played the type of game that you need to play to beat the Florida Panthers, and they didn't get the saves when they needed them, and they didn't score when they needed to score. Like, you think about that Stankoven tip. If that goes in, it's 1-1, and it's a completely different game. They come right back down, and they score, what, 37 seconds later, I think it was?
Yep.
Now it's 2-0 against the defending champs. You're chasing the game. You're opening yourself up. And they're going to strangle you. And they're going to step on your throat. And it's going to be all over. And that's what happened. And then you look at the Dallas-Edmonton game. Edmonton was winning that game. They got themselves into penalty trouble. They unraveled a little bit. They haven't done that all playoffs. I think that's a one-off.
Okay. So I do agree with you on the Edmonton situation. I think it's a one-off. I don't think you're going to see a meltdown like that from the Edmonton Oilers again in this series. I'm not saying the Oilers go on and win the series, but it's not going to be because of a meltdown. And that was a penalty kill, you know, discipline, total meltdown. And kudos to the Dallas Stars for taking full advantage of that. I mean, they took full advantage, scored the 3 power play goals, started off with Miro Heiskanen, who, by the way, his return to the Stars lineup has been so essential to their it is essential to their success, will continue to be essential to their success. And it's a biggest difference in this series might just be that Miro Heiskanen is back playing and Mattias Ekholm is not. I honestly think that could be just a huge swing in the Stars' favor. But I'll agree with you in that if that series goes on, and I think it goes deep, it's not going to be because immaturity or meltdowns that Edmonton loses. It's just going to be because Dallas plays better, and that's that. In regards to game one of the Carolina-Florida series, Sean, you covered it. You just said exactly what you just said. They played a strong enough game to win. They didn't get the saves when they needed, and they couldn't score when they needed. We've seen this before, right? I mean, we've seen this before. And so here's my point on this. I never felt in that game, covering that game in the building, that the Carolina Hurricanes had a chance to win the game. And they didn't get blown out. 5-2 is indicative of how the game went, I think, but it wasn't a blowout 5-2. I just never thought that they were in control. Finally, when they started to, you know, push a little bit, it was 3-1. They're chasing the game a little bit more, so you expect a little bit of a push. I thought Florida was in control. I thought Florida was able to exit the zone well. I thought that they were able to find space through the middle of the ice. And yes, the shot attempts, the shots on goal, they all favor the Carolina Hurricanes as they typically do. But again, they didn't connect. They didn't finish. They didn't get the saves when they needed to get. And they never seemed like they were able to at any point seize control and have a legit comeback chance in that game. And that is a problem, and it's the narrative that is carried on with the Carolina Hurricanes, particularly against the Florida Panthers. Maybe this one was a little bit different from the other four games that they played in the 2023 series, because those were all one-goal games, and game one was a four-overtime game. That's different, but I just never felt that Carolina was a threat to win that game.
It is the same narrative, right? They can't score enough to put away a Florida team that's really well-coached and really well-positioned, right? They've done everything that Carolina is trying to do. They understand what it takes. Carolina is still trying to figure it out. And, you know, I also think it took Carolina a little while to get into the fray. All right. It had been, what, 6 days since they had played? You can't replicate that. And here comes Toronto sky high after game seven, you know, frolicking in the pool at their hotel on the 24 hours they have off. They're still in complete game mode, right? They're still fresh from playing game seven. Everything is familiar to them. It's that two-day grind, right, that you get into the playoffs and you don't even think. You just go. And Carolina didn't have that because they had been off for so long, because they had been so efficient in the first two rounds, winning each series in five games.
Florida came in rolling, right? I mean, and I think that does make a difference at the start of games, but it has to make a difference for Carolina later on in the game. And obviously it couldn't make a difference because the Hurricanes are not built for a three-goal comeback. They're barely built for a two-goal comeback. They're built to be a team that when they get ahead, they clamp you down. They pressure all over the ice. They will just destroy anything you want to do. And that's why, and I understand it's like the cliche of how important it is to get a lead in the game, right? And those questions sometimes get asked and the answers are always the same. Well, you always want to get a lead, but game's not over if you give up the first goal, right? It's so important for the Carolina Hurricanes to get a lead in game two tonight here where I am in Raleigh at Lenovo Center, because the last thing this team wants to do is have to chase the game against the Florida Panthers, who are a team that plays similar, not exactly the same, similar to the way they do. So they know what it is. They would expect the pressure to be on them, the constant forecheck, the heavy hitting, the bang in the ball. Like, you go back for a puck, you turn, bang, a guy's in your face. That's the game. But if Florida has to chase it, it's different, just as if Carolina has to chase it. So I do think that old cliche of, oh, it's important to get a lead, it really does matter for the Carolina Hurricanes to come back and make this a 1-1 series. Because let's be honest, if this goes 2-0 and it goes back to Florida, the narrative is already there. I wrote about it. Imagine that, though, right, Sean? This would now be 14 consecutive losses in the conference final. Take away 2009. You could take away 2019 if you want to as well. Because it's, I mean, that Carolina team, if you remember, was just like, oh, my God, we're in the conference final, right? I mean, and they were completely overmatched by the Boston Bruins in that conference final. But 2023 matters. It's the same team, same core, same coaches. It's only a couple of years. And now you go down 2-0 to the same team going back into their building. And this team that you're playing is better. And now it's got a championship medal to them. That's about the worst position you could possibly ask for if you're the Hurricanes. It's essential they get a lead in game two. And that's how they have to. That's how they'll win the game, by getting a lead, and they can now play their game.
I think they just need to feel good. Like, I don't even know that they need the lead per se. Certainly it would help. I think they need to feel good about their game. I think they need to feel like they have the upper hand, and you know, sometimes bounces happen, and you can overcome that. I don't know that they ever felt good about their game. What I did like is Rod didn't chase game one. He didn't load up. He didn't wear his guys down. Like, he kind of hoped they came back, but he wasn't going to sacrifice a bunch of pieces to try and make it look cosmetic. You know, he kept everybody relatively fresh. He needs to find an answer on defense. Scott Morrow is not the answer.
That's a big problem for them. Now, we'll find out soon. By the time you listen to this, we might have the answer. But I'll be shocked if Jalen Chatfield isn't in the lineup for game two. He's been skating. He had a full participant in the morning skate the other day. He skated with the extras on Wednesday. They don't have a morning skate today, but my guess is he'll be on the ice at some point this morning, as we're recording this before I go, by the way, to the arena. But you're right. Nikishin in game five against Washington was not the answer. That guy's going to be really good, but not yet. Like, that's a really, really hard spot to put him in. And in that game, you know, yeah, okay, he hit Ovechkin at one point. He had a shot on goal, but he nearly cost them a goal that was overturned because of offside, but it was his fault that the goal was scored. And you can't, if you're Rod Brendamore, forget that just because the goal was overturned because 20 seconds earlier they entered the zone a step ahead of the puck, right? And Scott Morrow, the goal that A.J. Greer scores, it's a great rush goal. Terrific play by Nico Mikkola. By the way, Nico Mikkola is the most fun name to say in the league. Morrow's back. He's the one guy back. I don't love the way he plays it, but it's a tough spot. But then the penalty. A puck over the glass penalty from the far side. Like, that's really a tough penalty to take, and they score a power play goal on that. So I don't think he'll be in. The problem is that when they lost Chatfield, they didn't have a veteran defenseman to go to. And that's a miss at the trade deadline. You know, like, that's a miss. They needed to get somebody else at that point to have a veteran defenseman to go to, you know, a Brendan Smith type, if you will, that you can just insert into the lineup because of injury and you'll feel comfortable. They don't have that, and they got away with it against Washington in game five. They got burned by it in game one against Florida. I'll be shocked if Chatfield doesn't play. And let's not forget, Jalen Chatfield, not a household name, not a star player, but he's a 20-minute-a-night top four defenseman who will pound you through the boards. And that's exactly what the Hurricanes need in this series.
Scott Morrow is going to be really good in this league. I do. He was a really good college player. I think he has the tools to be a good NHL player. He was lost. Like, you look at the other goal, he's standing right in front of his goalie, right? He didn't give Anderson a chance to see that goal. You know, it's the small things that become so big in the playoffs. And it's the things, again, that come so naturally to the Florida Panthers. It seems like every time you look at them and there's a 50-50 puck, they're winning it. And every time there's a decision to be made, whether to press or stay back, whatever the options are, they always seem to make the right one. You know, and I thought it was funny because Paul Maurice in the third period on TV, not happy with his team's game. Oh, there's a lot of things we could do better, blah, blah, blah. And that's typical coach speak. But to me, it'd be very hard for them to play a much better game than that.
Well, he said after the game, I didn't love our game tonight, but I understood it. Not sure I understand what that means, but you know, but the next day I asked him. So yesterday I asked him, I said, you didn't love your game. What about it? You know, whatever. He goes, it looked better on video than it did live to me in person. And I think there's an understanding. He certainly has to have it. And the team has to have it, that when you play the Carolina Hurricanes, your game's never going to look great. It's very, very rare that your game is going to look exactly the way you want it to. They're really good at taking you out of the game plan that you want to be able to play. But that's why you have to take advantage of the opportunities that they give you. We talked about that in the Washington series. If you don't take advantage of those chances that the Hurricanes give you, you're not going to get very many of them. So it's going to be a problem. Florida took advantage of the chances that the Hurricanes gave them in game one, and the Hurricanes did not take advantage of the chances that the Panthers gave them in game one. And that's the difference in the game, but also a big difference in the game, Sean. And it's amazing how narratives change, because Freddie Anderson comes into this series with an unbelievable save percentage. Best goalie in the playoffs through the first two rounds. A high danger save percentage that's the best in the league at .923. Allowed one goal on 31 high danger shots on goal that he faced in the Washington series. He gave up three on five high danger shots in game one. And the shot from distance, Bennett's shot from distance on the power play, was the first goal from long distance that he's given up in the playoffs. We can talk all we want about capitalizing on chances, killing penalties, you know, getting to your game, getting a lead. If Freddie Anderson's not better in game two, forget about it.
We spend every series talking about the big guys. Barkov, to Chuck, Verhage, you know, on the other side, Aho, all those guys. All those guys. Who did the damage?
Yeah.
Their third and fourth line, Marchand, their third and fourth line is just eating people up. That's the thing. Like, you almost feel good about your game. You're like, wow, Matthew Tkachuk, he was almost invisible, right? Like, I didn't see much out of him. Barkov, we kind of contained him. Verhage gets the opening goal and you know, complete luck, right? That puck rolls up on him. That's the only way he gets it under the bar. If that puck's flat, he puts it right into Anderson's chest. They did a decent job against their top six. Florida's bottom six ate him up.
Yeah, and their D. Ekblad scores. Mikkola makes that nice play, right? I mean, yeah, and their D eats him up. And Verhage's goal, you're right. Like, the puck gets up on him a little bit, and it's a terrific shot as a result. But it's a great play. Like, Orlov is kind of caught in the triangle there with Barkov, Tkachuk, and Verhage. And Verhage's got all kinds of space there to make a play. You know, that can't happen. And that's the other thing, too, from the Carolina perspective. Their penalty kill, which was just terrific in the first two rounds, wasn't in game one. Like you said about Edmonton, and we do got to get to that Edmonton-Dallas series, but like you said about Edmonton, you know, you don't expect the meltdown like that again. I don't expect the Hurricanes penalty kill to be as easy to play against in, you know, going on in this series as it was in game one. That to me is as much of a one-off as the Edmonton Oilers meltdown in game one of their series against Dallas.
I think the biggest thing for me with Carolina is I'm worried about their mental state, which I'm really surprised, I would say, about a Rod Brind'Amour team, because that dude don't sweat anything. He doesn't care. He's got ice water in his veins, and he's seen it all. But at times, maybe it's the opponent, maybe it's how frustrating they are. They seem fragile, right? And understandably so. Like, at this point, you're like, what do I have to do to beat this team? You know, so it comes down to tonight, like you said, it's going to be really, really important. You know, but then again, like, and then you look at the other series, and I think it's the other way around, right? Like, Edmonton knows. They went to game seven of the Stanley Cup final. They erased a 3-0 deficit to get there. That's the part everybody forgets about that series. Right? Oh, it went to game seven. It only went to game seven because Edmonton didn't blink at 3-0. They didn't blink at 3-1. They didn't blink at 3-2. So now they're down 1-0. Are you worried about the Edmonton Oilers? No.
Not worried about him. I don't forget that that series went 3-0. I don't think you forget that that series went 3-0 and then went to game seven. You know, little bit of extra travel on the little extra travel on the body on that one, you know. But no, I don't worry about the Edmonton Oilers. Look, I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl were flying last night. They were buzzing all over the place. Their depth is really, really strong. And it's a big narrative change for the Oilers that now all of a sudden they've got the depth, right? And the depth has come through for them in the first two rounds. And I would expect it at times to come through for them against the Dallas Stars too. I mean, I know what Stuart Skinner is saying when he says we let our guard down. This is exactly what he said after the game. We let our guard down for 5 or 6 minutes. I get that. But it's to me, that's a disservice. And it's disrespectful to the Dallas Stars because you didn't let your guard down. They were better. They took advantage. You may have lost your discipline a little bit, and then the Stars just they were just dominant at that point. You could feel the momentum swing on Heiskanen in goal, and then it just kept rolling. And it wasn't like, I don't think the Oilers weren't wilting. They weren't letting their guard down. It's the Stars were just pushing and pushing and pushing. I guess it's, you know, it depends on which way you want to look at it. But Sean, the reason I picked the Dallas Stars in this series kind of showed up a little bit in game one. Miro Heiskanen factor, I mentioned it before, is so important. He's back. He's playing 25, 26 minutes again. He scores the goal that gets them back in it. He makes such terrific defensive plays. I forget who it was on, and right after it, there was a hooking penalty on Leon Bischel. But Miro Heiskanen basically shut down a two-on-one rush at some point, just with his positioning and his stick positioning. That's how good he's just so good in all areas. And his return for the Stars. Then you add in that fact that Mattias Ekholm is not there for the Oilers. It's such a swing. And the swing also counts on the penalty kill versus the power play, the Oilers' penalty kill versus the Stars' power play. If you look at it going into game one, the Stars were 30.8% on the power play in the playoffs so far. The Oilers on the PK were 66.7%. So are we really surprised that the Dallas Stars came back in this game on their power play against the Oilers' penalty kill with Stuart Skinner in net? Big reasons why I picked the Stars in this series was their dominance on the power play, the Oilers' problems on the PK, and the swing from defensemen of Heiskanen being back and Ekholm not, and the clear advantage that Dallas has in goal. And it all showed up in game one.
It certainly did, and the dominance in goal is almost undeniable, right? Like, look, Stuart Skinner was really good against Vegas when he came back. Back-to-back shutouts, one in overtime. But Edmonton's way better defensively, right? They protect their goalie a lot more than they ever have that I can remember. Their penalty kill was better against Vegas. They got better against Vegas. I thought they had figured it out a little bit. I think the bigger difference is, like, you talk about Heiskanen, and he's huge. I think him and Bouchard cancel each other out. The listeners can't see. You're making the face that I make when we almost get in a car crash.
I just felt that comment was face. Almost like a car crash.
Dude, watch that kid play. He's better defensively than he's been. Offensively, he's ridiculous. The numbers that he's put up, he has more goals than any defenseman in Edmonton Oilers history in the playoffs than his coach.
Other than his coach, Paul Coffey.
He's been in the playoffs for 3 years.
Video game numbers for a defenseman.
He dominates games, and his defense has gotten better. Look at his plus minus. Look at his 5-on-5 play. It's all better, right? So you're talking two legitimate number ones, but where the difference comes is then you drop down to Darnell Nurse, fine defenseman, or Thomas Harley.
Yeah.
Who's a number one in waiting and became a number one when Heiskanen was out. He was playing 26 and a half minutes in the playoffs in his third year in the NHL, and he was dominating. So now Pete DeBoer has two number one options. And what do you need against the Edmonton Oilers? Two number one options, because they have two dogs.
Yeah. I'm going to go back to what you said about Bouchard first, okay? I totally understand. His offensive game is elite. It's without question elite. His defensive game is improved. Every time he gets the puck, I still wait for the turnover.
But it doesn't happen anymore.
It does. It does. He had a couple of giveaways last night. The egregious turnover isn't killing them, right? And they're a lot better at defending. There's no question about it. But I don't wait for the turnover. I don't wait for the mistake with Miro Heiskanen. I expect the right play every single time, because 9.9 out of 10 times he's going to make the right play. And it would have been easier if I just said 99 out of 100, by the way. But, you know, I said 9.9 out of 10. Regardless, Bouchard is not always going to make the right play. And that's, to me, the biggest difference. And that is why not having Ekholm, and I go back to it again, is really a problem for them. I honestly thought it was going to be a problem against LA. And at times it was, no question about it. But they were able to get by that. Part of that is the Kings' fault on their own. I certainly thought it was going to be a problem against Vegas. And that proved to be much easier of a run for the Oilers than I thought it was going to be. So we'll see how this goes for the rest of the way. But listen, I think I would not be surprised if the Edmonton Oilers tie this series up 1-1 going back. They're good. They're really, really good. But to go to the next, what we were talking about, they're the swinging goaltending, right? Jake Ottinger is just steady. He wasn't great last night, but he was good enough. He's steady. He's positionally sound. He's going to make saves. He's unflappable. You cannot say the same thing about Stuart Skinner. And if Skinner had played better in game one, if he had a strong game one to build off of how he finished the Vegas series, I would say, yeah, okay, Stuart Skinner is becoming again the goalie that we saw in the playoffs last year, just getting better as it goes on. But now this is another hiccup game. And it's something that has to be alarming, I think, for the Oilers.
I think they're used to it, right? And I think in their own way, they have faith in Stuart Skinner. You look back to the Vegas series, and the one game that Vegas wins, craziest play probably of the playoffs, right? Riley
yes.
Smith from the goal line scores because Skinner's completely out of the picture. You can't see the goal from where he is, which I don't blame him for.
That was a complete and epic. That was an epic breakdown by everybody else.
Yeah, but now you're like, oh, there it is. There's Vegas's entry back into the playoffs. He doesn't give up another goal.
Yeah.
For 120, 137 minutes and change, he doesn't give up another goal. Like, for everything that is heaped upon Stuart Skinner, he's not a number one, he's fragile. That dude puts mistakes in his rearview mirror like very few goalies I've ever seen. Right, he gets pulled in the LA series twice, and then they say, we're going to go with the other guy. The other guy wins six games in a row. He's not great in any of them.
No.
Right? He played to like an 884 save percentage. That's how good Edmonton is, but you can't replace a goalie that hasn't lost. Then he gets hurt, and then Skinner comes back, and he's not a basket case. He played well in every game against Vegas that he was in. Even the 4-3 loss, he didn't play poorly. I'm not all that concerned about last night. What I am concerned about is if he continues to play poorly or he gets hurt.
Uh-oh. If he gets hurt, forget it.
Oh, boy.
Listen, any team that would have to go to their third goalie in the conference final would be in serious trouble, okay?
No, I understand that, but that's what I'm saying. That's where they're at now.
Yeah, that is where they're at now. I understand what you're saying about the way he's come back and all that. But to say, like, you have to – they're not going to say it. They have full faith in him. I mean, heck, this is a goalie that got them to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final last year. So, yeah, you're going to have faith in that guy. But I have concerns about him. Part of those concerns – and the goalies don't play against each other. But I know exactly what I'm going to get out of Jake Ottinger. I don't know what I'm going to get out of Stuart Skinner, and that's a big swing in this series, you know, the goaltending. And it's, like I said, it's part of the reason why I picked Dallas. But I will say this, game one of Dallas-Edmonton was way better than game one of Carolina-Florida. That being said, I don't like the narrative of there's not a lot going on, there's not going to be a lot going on in Carolina-Florida. That series is going to pick up some juice. The way these two teams play, the hitting that's involved, the players that are involved, I don't know if they showed it at all, but Andrei Svechnikov, you know, he kind of get a little bit of a flyby on Sergei Bobrovsky in game one, you know, a little bit of a elbow, caught him a little bit in the head. Okay, he's fine. Everything was fine. Listen, Matthew Tkachuk went right down the ice on the next stoppage of play and had a few words for Freddie Anderson. There's something brewing there. Shane Goss despair and Brad Marchand. Goss despair doesn't like the way Marchand does something. Fires the puck, admittedly, fires the puck directly at Marchand. Marchand loses it, gets the 4-minute roughing in the 10-minute. He's done for the game. There's something brewing there. There will be juice that picks up. There will be a lot that picks up here in Raleigh tonight at game two that we will be talking about, you know, writing about, and certainly when we do the podcast next week, depending on where this series is and how it goes, we'll be talking about it. There's going to be some things that are happening. These two teams don't like each other, but they respect each other. But I think there's a bit of a dislike on both sides. They've played each other enough to have that.
That play actually reminded me of the Alfredson, Niedermeyer, Stanley Cup final play, Ottawa and Anaheim, and Ottawa was so frustrated at the end, and Alfie was so frustrated. His was from a lot further distance.
Yes.
But it was a slap shot, dude.
Yeah.
It was a slap shot that went after him. And you probably didn't hear it because you were running down to the locker room, but they had A.J. Greer on because he had scored. He's a tough kid for them. And they asked him about Ghost, and he took about 4 seconds, 5 seconds, tried to formulate an answer, and then he said, I'm going to pass.
Yeah. Well,
Because, A, you don't want to say anything that's going to be used against you in the court of law.
yeah.
And then you don't want to give away, you know, what you're going to do. I think, you know, there will be some retribution, but I also think it'll be smart. You know, I thought in the heat of the moment that Brad Marchand knows to keep his cool. And if that's a 2-1 game, that gets answered for in game 2 or 3. It's a 5-1 game, 4-1, 5-1. I don't remember exactly, but the game was out of hand.
The game was over by then.
And that's why Gostisbehere here did that. So Marchand answered for it immediately. But I do think that the Florida Panthers at this point in their evolution are smart enough to deal with these things at the proper time.
Paul Maurice was asked after the game about the Marchand, about the Gostisbehere thing to Marchand, and he said, I'll let somebody else talk about that. And then I had the next question. And then yesterday at the media availability, he was asked about, you know, same thing, and he didn't answer it. And he goes, of course, I had the next question. I'm like, I got to follow this twice, you know, like, but that's all right. That's all right. Listen, I think that series is going to pick up some juice. Dallas Edmonton already has it. So lots going on there. But Sean, before we get out of here, we got some other things that, you know, there's 28 other teams, correct? Right. So, and there's news that's going on. Don Sweeney gets his extension with the Boston Bruins. I mean, real quick, I'll tell you, I'm not surprised. I kind of expected it after what, you know, the way the press conference went with Cam Neely and Charlie Jacobs after, you know, at the end of the season. And they put their trust into Sweeney. It was a bad year for the Boston Bruins. We know that. But on the whole, they've been a really good team under Don, with Don Sweeney as the GM. So recency bias, people are going to go nuts. Fans in Boston, I'm sure, are going to go nuts. But if you look at the whole thing, I mean, guys earned a 2-year extension.
I don't know.
No?
I'm not
Their winning percentage is terrific under him. And now they got a lot of, I believe that they have a ton of cap space too here.
Yeah, and look, they gutted their team year after year to try and win.
And he didn't force Patrice Bergeron to retire or David Krejci. The one issue that I will have, and it is the knock on him, they haven't drafted very well, right? They have not drafted well. They don't have a deep, they don't have a prospect core that you want to rave about right now. So that's a knock on him, no question about it. But the winning percentage that they've had under him, this is one bad season. Is that it? You know, are we count? Is that where we're at? We're just saying one tough season and a GM, you're out?
I'm surprised that there's that willingness to be patient. That team without Bergeron, without Marchand, scares me.
It's different. It's different, though. We haven't seen it.
No, but it scares me. And maybe it's as good as the – maybe we've had the same conversation after Chara, right? But there's always been a line of succession in Boston, right? It was Chara who kind of set the table and made them into a championship team. And then it was Bergeron who kind of bridged the gap a little bit, and Marchand. And now they're all gone. I don't know that Pasta's that guy.
I don't think he is.
He's going to play, and he's going to play hard for you, but he's not getting anybody's grill. I don't know if McAvoy's that guy. Like,
I think he is.
I don't know.
I think he is.
I don't know who the hot beat of that team is anymore. And that was a Boston hot beat.
That was a hot beat. Yes.
Let's go to Duncan.
I caught that. That was a hot beat. I think McAvoy is that guy. And they were missing him. You know, he got hurt in the Four Nations, and they were missing him for the last quarter of the season. And I'm not all that worried about the Boston Bruins. I'm really not. I think that they'll pick it back up. The concern you'd have if you're Boston is Montreal's taken that big leap. Ottawa's taken that leap.
Yeah. Rangers are going to get better again.
Rangers are going to get better again, you would assume. Carolina's not going anywhere. Washington is probably going to be okay. I think they're going to be okay. We'll see. Florida's certainly not going anywhere. Tampa's not going anywhere. Though they got to get better in the playoffs, they're not going anywhere right in the regular season. So those are the concerns, no doubt. for the Boston Bruins, but the Bruins have to believe in themselves. They got to believe, and we'll see. I mean, I was not, I guess the point is I'm not surprised at all that Don Sweeney got the extension. And I wouldn't be surprised to flip it over to the team that we could spend hours talking about, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We will not spend hours talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Brendan Shanahan, if he has already been granted permission to go talk to the New York Islanders and his contract is up, well, he's done in Toronto. They're not granting him permission to go speak to another team if they have plans to bring him back as president of the team. Am I missing something here, Sean?
No, I don't think so, and I don't think that's going to be it. What happened in Toronto in those final two home games has to be answered for.
Has to be. Yes.
You can't sell to your public. Here's what we did. Here's your lasting memory of our team, and we're going to run it back. Game one, here's the same team with the same management, and we're going to run it back. And can I have some more money?
Yeah, could you imagine? So what's the definition of insanity? Continuing to try to do the same thing over and over again when it doesn't work, right? Well, it is not working. Listen, they're a good team. We know that, right? They've played well. They're a good team, talented team and all that. To me, it's not that. It's not that they lost Game 7, Sean, because there's no shame in losing a seven-game series to the Florida Panthers. They're a really good team. We know that. There's no shame in that. It's how they lost. They come back and play a mature, responsible road game in Game 6 to get back on this thing and get this Game 7 at home. And then they come out and they play about as irresponsible and immature and erratic and childish Game 7.
Wow.
Let me soften it up a little bit. They did not play a mature game. It was not a responsible game. The way they played in Game 6, if they could have brought that game to Game 7, they might have been, you know, they might have won that. But it didn't happen. And it's that type of game has happened too often for this team. It's why you can't run it back.
I would argue that they did bring that game to Game 7. And then Florida scored. And then Florida scored again. And then that game went out the window.
Then that game went out.
Because their dreams were dying again.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I think at some point you have PTSD. Craig Berube doesn't have PTSD.
No.
And he's like, oh, I like this team. I thought that they were going to do it. Well, that's because he doesn't have the mental experiences of everybody else on that team that's like, oh, no, come on, dude, not again. Right? And I think the one thing that might have bothered me the most wasn't even the game. It wasn't even losing. It's just the way that it's almost okay, right? There's never anybody that stands up and says, no, it's not. Like, I'm going to throw a tantrum.
Yeah.
Right? And Mitch Marner threw a tantrum, and he's being crucified for it. Right. And that really bothers me because there's all these other players in our game who've thrown tantrums.
McDavid in the playoffs last, in the Stanley Cup final last year.
Finally, Connor McDavid's a leader now. He showed his leadership. But Mitch Marner does it, and oh, what a baby.
Yeah. Well, listen, so the funniest thing to me about this narrative with the Leafs now is I've heard this multiple times. Well, they can't sign Marner. He's gone. They should offer Tavares. The only way he's coming back is if he takes the most team-friendly deal possible. But it wouldn't be – why don't you just move on from the two of them, and then you sign Marchand and Bennett, and it changes everything. Why would Marchand and Bennett sign there? Why would they do that? Why would – Brad Marchand has gone to Florida, and it's like everybody else, he's like, this is great. This is unbelievable down here. I don't know if he's going to sign with Florida, but this is great. Sam Bennett has made – he's turned his entire career around by going to Florida. And obviously public enemy number one in Toronto, but, like, he's just – I mean, it's a great place to live. It's a great place to play. The team's good. The franchise is terrific. All these – why would these two guys just say, nah, you know what? Yeah, we're going to go to Toronto. we'll be the ones to solve this because the games that we play. Why would they do that? Yeah, those are the types of players you want to go get. Sure, that's fine. But why would they do it? I don't understand it.
Every great player believes he's the missing piece. Why did players go to the Boston Red Sox for years and years? And the players who went and beat the Yankees after being down 3-0, they were all heroes.
Yeah, you need that in your life, though, if you're Brad Marchand. You need that in your life if you're Sam Bennett.
It's an awful nice feather in your cap, and they're both Canadians, no?
I know, but they're Stanley Cup champions. They're not chasing the Stanley Cup.
Oh, but when you can do that, when you can end that kind of drought.
You think Marner's back with the Leafs?
No.
No, I don't think he is. What about Tavares?
I think he needs to go somewhere else.
I do, too.
He needs to go somewhere else, and he'll be somewhere else.
Yeah. Tavares, you think he's back?
No, I don't. We just talked about it. They got to change. They got to change. They got to get new blood in there. I think Berube's going to want his guys in there. And I'm not saying that Tavares isn't his guy. Tavares is a great player. I think they need new guys. And I think they need Berube type of guys. And he's going to really push hard. And there's going to be a bit of a vacuum, right? If what we're talking about with Shanahan leaving and everything else that's going on, you know, there's going to be some power struggles. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see who comes out and who gets the final say. But I would be surprised if Tavares comes back.
Well, we could spend an entire podcast on the Leafs. But we're not going to do it. We could keep going. We're not going to do it because we're done with them. They're done. There'll be news for another day. We do have the conference finals going on. I still can't do it, Sean.
We finished where we started.
Yeah, we're finishing where we started. Just like a good story, you know? Full circle here. But this was fun, and I can't wait to get to the arena for game two tonight, because I definitely, like we talked about, it's going to be some juice, and there's game two in Dallas on Friday. The series keep going, and we'll keep going. We'll be back next week.
Can't wait. I'm joining the Dallas series for game five when it should just start getting good.
Yep.
And we'll talk next week, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to talk about, a few more coaching changes in the left. We'll have a world champion. I know you're on the edge of your seat about that.
Definitely.
We'll be really close to the Stanley Cup final.
Absolutely. Well, as always, the podcast brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip. Enjoy the hockey.